did. We'll get to that shortly. Good evening, guys. Welcome to another Tuesday Night Live here with Golf Days Australia. Tonight, I'm pretty proud to say this week, brought to you by a couple of sponsors that have come on board. Of course, we have to thank Dint Putters. So Dint Putters obviously come on board. We've got the competition running with them at the moment to give away one of their amazing handcrafted Australian-made putters. I think Steve-O's got one of them in the bag at the moment there, so make sure to check that out. And we've also got an announcement, which you'll hear in this week's podcast as well, but Cobra Puma have come on board. So they're sponsoring and looking after Golf Days Australia, which we're very excited about. They've sent us out some gear to test out and try. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I'm feeling pretty good in the Puma gear tonight.
Yeah, definitely, mate. It's great to have them on board. And I suppose I feel pretty privileged. Our golf's definitely not up to scratch for being sponsored, but definitely I suppose they're helping us out from what we're doing on social media and with the podcast, et cetera. So, yeah, loving having them on board. Appreciate Dint Putters, Puma. Fantastic to have you on board, guys. Welcome to the team.
Yeah, exactly. We've got plenty of things lined up with those guys, so keep an eye out for that. We'll be hopefully running a few good competitions to go. So a reminder for those that are with us live tonight, obviously we record this for our podcast as well, but if you're with us live on Facebook tonight, there is a link back in the description which you can click on and give us the permission to use your name and photo during the conversation. So if you've got some questions tonight or in future ones, it's interactive. You can get in there, you can ask a question, and we'll bring it up and we'll know who it comes from as well. So that's something that we love doing. So don't be afraid to get in there. And I can see Steve just put the link in there now. Easy for you in the comments. All right, let's get into tonight. Obviously, you know, we look back on some of the interviews that we've had lately, and we've had, you know, some of the greats, Greg Chalmers, Terry Pilkadaris, Paul Gow. Last week we had major champion winner Hannah Green. We've got some big ones coming up, Trav Smyth, Dimi Papadatos, Blake Windred, plenty more to come. And a reminder, if you've missed any of those interviews, you can scroll back through the Facebook group. You can watch them, or better still, you can jump onto the podcast and listen back to them as well. So if any of those names interest you, they've all been great interviews so far, and I'm sure tonight will be another cracker as well. So tonight we've got a bloke with us that he's had a couple of professional wins, one being the New Zealand PGA Championship. So he's actually second New Zealand PGA champion, because we've had Jared Felton on a couple of weeks ago. Then he's played the European Tour for a few years, made the cut in the 2011 Open Championship at Royal St. George. He's played a few WGC tournaments alongside the best in the world. And most importantly, he's had the ultimate pleasure of being paired up with myself at Royal Leighton Pro-Am in 2018. So he's known around the traps as Mr. Consistent, Matt Miller. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, boys. How are we?
We're great. Doing well, mate. Doing well.
That's the way.
Yeah. How are you going down in Canberra at the moment? A few frosty starts at Federal?
Yeah. I try not to get out there until about at least 10:30 anyway. The early starts in winter are not an option here as far as I'm concerned.
Terrible.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you. How is Federal going at the moment? You're an ambassador down there in Canberra.
Yeah, it's going well. Obviously, COVID has sort of given it a bit of a beating and put a few things on hold. But look, it's the course itself is holding up really well through the winter. It's in good condition. We've got a good team there. Anthony Sinclair and Mark Lazenby and their teams and a great board as well. So they're doing a great job making some decisions for the future, and there's plenty on the go there, and the club's sort of, it's flourishing at the moment, more members joining, and yeah, so it's a good place to be.
Yeah, awesome. It's we have Amy Walsh, the Ladies European Tour pro with us on our podcast, and we were talking to her last night, and she was doing a tough up at the Goldie on the Glades, 22 degrees in her polo. So I'm sure they got their work cut out for them down in Canberra, and it would be nice to be up in the Goldie each day playing at the moment.
Yeah, I try and try and get away from the winter here a bit and try and play in Queensland where possible, or anywhere in Asia that'll have us through this time, but this year I'm stuck at home, and I'm as I get older, I think I'm feeling it more. So
For sure, we'll get to nice that to later on. Spring. You shouldn't be you shouldn't be back in Canberra during the winter playing, but obviously we'll touch on that later on when we get into the current situation and where you're up to with your golf. But to start a bit of the "This Is Your Life," I guess, section. Born in Wollongong, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a long time ago, back in '76.
Yep. So how did you how'd you get started in the game? Was it down there in the Gong?
Actually, it was in Goulburn. We moved to Goulburn in '84, I think it was. End of '83, beginning of '84. And my best mate at the time there, Justin Taylor, his father Terry was a really good player at Goulburn, and Justin and I sort of played all the sports together. And I'd go to their place after school with mum and dad still at work, and so we'd tag along with Terry. You know, I think he played off about 2 on the old handicapping system, you know, back then. And he was quite a player, so we'd tag along and drag his clubs around, and then, you know, next minute we're pulling a few out and some balls and hitting them everywhere and driving him mental. And and then all of a sudden, you know, we were pretty competitive, and we were playing the Saturday afternoon junior comp, and before you knew it, we were, you know, 10 years old and, you know, members of the club and playing, you know, 3 comps a week. So, I sort of got into it in Goulburn.
Okay. And when, what age were you when you got down to, you know, or what age were you when you thought, I want to take this seriously and look at becoming, you know, professional golfer in the future?
Yeah, I came down to sort of, you know, you'd see Brett Ogle floating around in Goulburn a bit just before I left in 89. I think we came to Canberra, and 80. Yeah, Brett had come back from time to time, and you'd see a few others, and it was always great to watch those guys, and that sort of gave you a bit of a live perspective of, you know, how good they were, and, you know, what it'd be like to try and be as good as someone like that. So, but when I got to Canberra, I sort of gave away all the other sports, and I reckon probably by the time I was 14, 15, I didn't want to do anything else. I wanted to play golf. School, I probably could have put in a lot more effort than I did. And yeah, I just really wanted to play golf. That was it for me.
Okay. And so was there any other sports that were there for you besides, you know, did you have that decision where you had to decide between one or the other?
I played pretty much all other sports, just about, probably a handful of others. And, but it was, you know, I was all right at those. I wasn't, probably wasn't going to excel at them, but, you know, I could play them and play them pretty well. But, you know, golf was it. It just, you know, it's, you see people all the time who take up the game, you know, it's a bit of a bug, you know, you get that bug and away you absolutely. Go. And I was sort of like that in terms of wanting to go on and do it for a career. So, it wasn't much of a decision. My parents used to say to me, you know, you can't play football. You can't go skiing. You can't do this. You can't do that. You don't want broken bones later in your life, you know, if you're going to be a professional. And I sort of probably took that a little bit too seriously. I gave away pretty much everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I suppose getting into it then, turning pro in 1999, and that's a question we're asking. We've been asking all the great folks we've had on for the Tuesday night chats is around it being either a foregone conclusion that you were always going to be turning pro. That seemed like, you know, it was written in stone, or, you know, was it a leap of faith that you had to take to make that decision and go, I'm putting all chips in? But by the sounds of it, it was a foregone conclusion. That was it. That was what you wanted to do. And the skills were obviously there to make that decision. Tell us about how that was for you in that first year turning pro.
Yeah, well, I guess I probably, you know, as an amateur, I wasn't really, like, I was, you know, I played golf, you know, in schoolboy teams and so on, but certainly wasn't thought of as, you know, in the top echelon. You know, we had players like Jeff Ogilvy and so on in the same years, and, you know, in the same schoolboy tournaments he'd play against. You know, so for me, I wasn't a great amateur or anything. You know, and I guess there was no definite, you know, that you were a Jeff Ogilvy who was destined for great things. You know, so to me, it was a bit different. My parents sort of said to me, look, you need to do a traineeship. You need to go and do your 3 years and get a qualification there. you know, in case, you know, it doesn't work out. And, you know, to me, that was, I mean, I was listening, but at the same time, I was saying, you know, there's no option. Yeah. It's going to work out.
You're hearing
you know,
it, but not listening. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. as a young player at the time, you know, you have your dreams and your things that you want to achieve. And, you know, I guess for me, I just, that's what I saw and that's what I went after. But I did my traineeship, you know, three years here in Canberra and finished at the end of 1998. And yeah, and that was it. I was off to play after that and I'm glad I did.
And tell us about that first year as pro. Was there any, were there any sort of notable occasions that happened that year?
Yeah, well, back then the Victorian Open was quite a big event. I think it was $1 million, I reckon, about that mark. So I remember qualifying for it. I had to qualify twice. And the qualifying must have started in about October or November. And I went down to Werribee Park and I was playing some great golf. And I won the qualifying there with about 6 under or something like that. And came back and then I had, ages before the next one. And the next one was, I think it was late December or beginning of January, and I think the tournament was the first week of January. That's right. So it must have been first week of January, and I went down to Amstel, and I think I might have won that qualifying, the final one to get through, or run second, and I got into the tournament, and I thought, oh wow, you know, how good is this? And went out and played in the tournament, and led the first day, shot 6 or 7 under, round Victoria Golf Club, leading with Jim Benepi at the time, and maybe it's just Jim and I, and it might have been someone else. Oh, Kenny Druce, I reckon. Or maybe Druce was one back. But anyway, I remember, you know, thinking, geez, wow, you know, what a day out. And, you know, this is incredible. And, you know, having all the waves of emotion. And as I left the course that Thursday, Ian Baker Finch caught me on the way out and he stopped and had a bit of a chat. And I loved Ian Baker Finch. And his words of advice were, you know, he said, you know, I watched a lot of your golf. It was fantastic. You know, it was very complimentary. And then he said, but just one thing. He said, you can't win the tournament tomorrow. Just remember that. And I went, okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, and I was playing great golf. Anyway, the next day I came out, hit a couple of ordinary shots in the wind, couple of bad lies here and there, plugged in bunkers, and you know, next minute, and then all of a sudden I think I three-putted the last for 79 or 80, might have been 80.
Yeah, right.
Missed the cut by a shot.
Oh, so, no.
Wow.
So first week in, this thing was going to be really easy, and then just and then like
you,
that.
You missed the cut.
Ouch. Yeah, so it was a long drive home back to Canberra. There was nothing on for me the next week. But, look, 1999 was great. I think I won a Pro-Am that year and you know, had some good results here and there. But I didn't have a full card or anything that year to play. So it was a bit of a difficult year. And as it is for a lot of the players, when you come out, you know, you've got to learn. You learn many different things. It's not just about golf or schedules. You learn about yourself, you learn about, you know, the whole package, how to improve and, you know, and where you need to go. And you tend to pay attention to a lot of other players, you know, usually players that are older than you, and try and work out, you know, why they're as good as they are and what they do. So there's a fair bit of that going on as well.
Yeah. And I suppose you don't really think about that Ian Baker Finch moment too often, do you?
No, but he was right. I remember thinking on the way home, I thought, yeah, he was definitely right. You certainly can't win it, but you can lose it.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose, and then moving forward a bit further, and we look at the European Tour, 2006 to 2009, you went through all three stages of the Q School. You had four top 10 finishes. Your best year end result was 115th on the 2006 Order of Merit, and best finish of joint fourth, so tie fourth place in the 2007 New Zealand Open. Tell us about the experience of Q School, going through, you know, the 3 years and as good as that reads, it's brilliant.
Cure School. It was quite tough. You know, I was fortunate enough. I went and worked in a bar here at the golf club that I played at the time, Belconnen. The West Canberra Magpies owned it, and I went to work in their big club down at Holt here in Canberra, and just to earn a few more bucks. And I was working there late nights and that, and playing some good golf. A good friend at the time, who happened to be the captain of the club, he said he'd be happy to fund my. He'd loan me the money to go the first time. To enter the Q school. And I thought, gee, that's great. And then he happened to also talk to the club, and they were able to fund my first light over and back. So, but that first qualifying, I think, was in September at Chart Hills down in Kent. And, yeah, I went there and played really well, actually. I think I was leading through round one or two and playing some really good golf. And I think ended up finishing about fifth or sixth there and played really well and thought, you know, this is all right. And then you go home for a few weeks and you got that, you know, that 6 weeks or so before you go back to play stage two, you know, and then we travel back there and played stage two in Spain down at PGA Catalunya, north of Barcelona, almost close to the French border there, near Girona. And we played there and managed to get through. Didn't get through by a lot. I think there's about 25 or 27 spots, and I reckon I was about 22nd or 23rd getting through. Remember having a pretty strong hole to finish on a par four and hit two nice shots in and, you know, made the two putts and, you know, and thought, yeah, wow. You know, but then we had a six rounder, I think, at San Roque down in Spain, not far from Valderrama, just around the corner from there. Around both the old course there and the new course. Great facility. Played well enough to get through there. I think I ran about 21st and 30 or 35, got a card, 30, I think. But just a long process and a very costly one. I think, you know, probably at the time with the exchange rate and so on, I remember it was about 20 to 21,000 Australian just to get, you know, all your entries, all your flights, accommodation, food, caddies, everything that goes with it. So it was quite an outlay. I guess I was still probably relatively new as a professional, only, you know, a few years into your career and still young. So, I was over the moon when I got through, and my good mate David Branson got through the same year. So that was a great event for us and a bit of celebration afterwards.
Yeah, nice.
You 2010, you come back and decide to play, I guess, the Tour of Australasia and One Asia Tour. So how did that decision get made to come home?
Yeah, that was a decision you probably you prefer not to have had to make. I've met my wife now, Beck. I met her in 2006 and the back of 2006, and we were engaged, you know, within a couple of years of that, and you know, we got married early 2010. But my golf really suffered in 2009. I tried to make changes to my golf swing. You know, I haven't got the prettiest swing out there, and you know,
sounded like you're about to blame your wife there, mate.
No, yet,
sorry, you're changing yet, so you're trying to make changes.
I was trying to make some changes to my swing and my technique, and you know, trying to straighten it right out, and it was never going to work. You know, it seemed to work at times on the range. You know, you'd think, oh yeah, it looks better, it feels better, it's coming along, you know, and the ball wouldn't be too bad. But the minute I got out on the golf course, it just wasn't working. And I persisted with it. I changed putters that year for the first time in a long time. And that wasn't a help. So I had a lot going on. And by the end of it, to be honest, I just got lost and just didn't really know where to turn. I thought it'd be a good idea to just come back, you know, and see how I felt about about, you know, whether or not I wanted to go back to Europe, and I'd come back and play here, and I was, it was great because another mate of mine, Brad Kennedy, pointed me in the right direction to go and see, you know, my current coach and his current coach still to this day, for the last 10 or so years, Michael Jones, and he has been an incredible influence on my golf, and not just, you know, in the technique side of it, but more so, you know, in terms of the whole picture, and making me into a better competitor. So, you know, I was very fortunate that, you know, sometimes things happen for a reason, as they say. And I think, you know, this was a really good reason. So
I'm guessing we spoke about, I think, this when we played up at Leeton, because you're known for a pretty, and I was going to talk about later, but I want to bring up now, you're known for a pretty unique stroke, especially with your putting stroke. And I remember asking you about that when we were playing that pro-am, and you mentioned that you don't even realize that you make that kind of stroke with your putter, how your putter goes out back and kind of arcs around. So was that what you were trying to change in 2009? Was it that those kind of things that we were talking about then?
Yeah, definitely. Both in putting and full swing, you know, because I'd fiddle around with, not quite Sergio with the 28 re-grips, but I'll adjust my hands and the face, and then, you know, it goes open, then it goes closed, and it goes outside.
Yes.
And then it drops back under. So, you know, I was trying to fix all this stuff, and, you know, really for what reason? You know, I think, you know, Mike just sort of said to me, you know, he has a background in, you know, human movement and biomechanics and so on. And he just said to me, he said, look, you'll be in a wooden box before you sort this out, you know, completely and get it right. He said, you've hit too many golf balls. And he said, let's just work with what you've got. Let's change what you do in your downswing to be able to move the ball both ways, and, you know, and in your setup, and, you know, and then in the putting, we haven't changed it at all. But to me, you're right. Like I said to you,
people don't even realize you do it.
That I play with, they bring it up all the time. And and they say, do you realize that? And I go, don't worry about it.
No, never heard about it.
Put it this way, you got to make sure all the kids are in bed, you know, you don't want them seeing this horror show before bed. So, you know, when I'm putting, don't watch the stroke, just watch the ball roll or something. You know, just, yeah, so.
Oh, it's incredible. I tell you, if anyone's out there and Matt's ever playing, go and check it out, because it is great to watch, and you're very pure with it as well. So,
So that's
2009, and then you come back 2010, and 2011 you qualify for the Open Championship over at Royal St George's, which in the end is won by Darren Clark over DJ and Phil Mickelson. Tell us about that week. How did you qualify for that week, and then I guess making the cut? You can't ask for a better debut in a major.
Yeah, qualified once again a long time in advance. It was the first week of about the 8th or 9th of January, I think, 2011. And my our daughter Charlotte was born on the 5th. And I said to Beck, I'm not going to go. I said, I'm not going to go down to Kingston Heath, you know, which is my favourite golf course too. And I said, look, I'm not going to go. I said, you know, this last couple of weeks, I said, I've hardly hit a ball. And I said, I was playing all right before that.
Yeah.
I said, but look, I'm not going to go. You know, and she said, oh, you should go. And I said, no, you know, she said, look, I've got to stay here in hospital anyway. There's a couple of things that, you know, a couple of complications here and there. And she said, look, mum's going to be here. And, you know, and look, we think you should go. And I said, oh, look, I'll go and hit a few balls and I'll see how I go. If I don't play any good this afternoon when I go out and hit a few balls, I'll just can it. Anyway, so away we went. And I went out and I played all right. And she convinced me to go. Said, you just go. So I drove down and stayed with my mate Marcus Fraser there, and went out, played a practice round at Kingston Heath, and sort of, you know, I was a bit rough out of the car, you know, and then come the next day, I played with Lee McKechnie, and who's a good mate, and Craig Parry as well, who I know very well, and it was great to play with those guys for 36 holes. And I managed to shoot 6 under in the morning, and then managed to shoot 4 or 5 under, I think, 4 under, I think, in the afternoon. Got a bit breezy and won the qualifying, I think, with 10 under, won by a couple, and yeah, next minute you're, you know, the emotions of having a, you know, a young girl only a few days before, and
yeah,
next minute you're off to the British Open. So yeah, that was, it was quite a week. Yeah, one I'll never forget. And then, yeah, so then I had, I guess, 6 months to 6 to 7 months to, you know, sort of wait for it to come around, I guess. But, you know, in that time I prepared really well for it. You know, Mike Jones, my coach, came down on a couple of occasions through the winter. I spent a lot of time hitting balls at Gold Creek on the practice holes, the freezing cold, in the rain, in the wind, you know. And I was in good shape too. I got pretty fit for it, and just to make sure I had that sort of that edge, I guess, because not, you know, being a I guess a, you know, world renowned player, you know, you're gonna have to try and find something somewhere else. So yeah, and then yeah, then we're off to the Open, and it was
you get a bit of a wet, windy week.
Look, the Thursday and the Friday were actually pretty decent.
You think it turned on the weekend, didn't it?
Bit of breeze. I think round two, I remembered coming in, and I hadn't holed a thing. I played really, really well in round two, and I just kept hitting edges, and they wouldn't drop. And I looked up and saw the board on 17. And I had about a 6-footer on the Friday for birdie, and I thought, and I'd crack a shot in there, and I was on the on the cut mark at 3 over, I think it was. Yeah, it's because the par 70 there, members played as a 72, but we played as a 70 in the tournament. And they've been breezy, but not, you know, not terrible for what it can be. And I had this 6-footer, and I thought, oh, geez, this would be nice to go in to be able to have a bit of cushion down the last. And hit a nice putt, took a step forward and watched it come back out at me and went, oh no. So, and then I thought, okay, all right, well, a tough 18th to go. And, you know, first things first, find the fairway. Don't hit it in that trap that's down the left side of the fairway. Sort of, it goes across the fairway. And I hit a nice drive, and I was watching it, you know, and then you get a few claps up there and you know that it's not in the trap, and you think, oh. And then hit a beautiful second shot, nearly took pain off the pin. And I thought it was great, but it took a big bounce up to the back of the green, and I had about 45, 50 feet coming back. And I rolled it up to about 2 feet, 2.5 feet, and it felt like it was about 30 foot.
Yeah.
2.5 foot. But, knocked it in, you know, and was, yeah, pretty ecstatic to get there. And I remember putting the card in, and there was an old fella there doing the cards, and, you know, he had the, you know, like your old school teachers used to have 30, 40 years ago. Yeah, well, he had the glasses with the chains. And he just dropped it off, and he says, "Congratulations, young man. Well done on making the cut in your first Open Championship." And I said, oh, thanks very much. You know, and I was pretty excited. And it's 8:45 at night, 8:50 on Friday night. And I'm thinking, you know, this is good. And he says, just lead over here. He says, I'll let you in on a little secret. And I said, oh, yeah, what's that? He says, if you could go out tomorrow and shoot yourself, you know, a couple under par in the morning, he says, you might find yourself very close come Sunday. He says, the weather's going to be awful tomorrow afternoon, just dreadful. And I thought, oh, wow. So here I am going home thinking, geez, this is all right. And I'm telling everyone, the family and coach in the car, we're on here. Like, you know, if I roll those putts in, you know, we're looking good here. We could be right up there Sunday morning, you know. Woke up Saturday morning, peeled the curtains back, and then went and shut them again. It was blowing 52 k's an hour. It was 8 degrees, and the rain was coming in sideways. So, and I was first out, drawn to play on my own with a odd number making the cut.
Right.
And the officials from the RNA were trying to get you to take a marker, which was a low handicapper from over the road at Prince's Golf Club. Like, and I said, look, guys, I'm sorry. Yeah. I said, look, I'm sorry, but I just don't. So I need all the time I can get today to try and get things dry. And, you know, I said, I just can't do it. So, you know, they were sort of, they weren't too happy with me, but it's your option. So look, I just need that. Sorry. So yeah. So I had a guy walk around with me, and the weather was just appalling through that morning. I think I shot 79, doubled the last. I might even finish double or something like that. Shot 79, 9 over. And, you know, I was I was thinking, oh, oh wow. Anyway, so the afternoon comes around and, you know, it's still looking pretty awful. And then Jimenez and Clark play, I think, the first hole and maybe half of the second hole in average weather. And then next minute, out of nowhere, the wind's gone and the sun's out. Oh. And that was it. And away they went, you know. And from there, they just sort of, you know, I think you had Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, and a few others that got right up there as well. But
Did you go find old mate?
This weather. Nah, he wasn't there when I put the car.
He wasn't anywhere inside.
Funny that. Funny that. Yeah. Someone else had got to him first.
Yeah, that's right. But no, it was an amazing experience. And I played with Paul Laurie on the Sunday, which was good. I played with Paul a few times, haven't played over in Europe a bit. But yeah, it was nice to play with him on the Sunday. And I think I played with Kevin Streelman the first 2 days. And he was a nice fella too. So. Yep.
Sometimes did he have his sunglasses on the back of his head backwards?
he probably didn't need them.
Yeah, he had the Wilson kit. He had the Wilson kit. And yeah, I mean, some of those American guys you play with, some of them are right. Some of them are really good.
Yeah.
And some of them, Not again.
We had a bloke in the group give it to Streels in the group a couple of weeks ago, just saying, you know, please do not let this guy win a tournament with his glasses hanging off the back of his neck. Just had it in for him. So
was that major? Was that everything you kind of thought it would be? I guess you grow up, and that's the epitome of our game is to play at a major, and you find yourself on that first hole at Royal St George's, which is a pretty tough starting hole as well. Was it everything you thought?
Yeah, it was. The atmosphere is just incredible, you know.
Yeah.
And commentators and people make the comments, you know, of how knowledgeable the fans are. And I truly believe that, you know, you get that feeling. They know what's a good shot, because sometimes around some of those golf courses, you know, 30 foot, 40 foot is a good shot, you know, and or actually missing something in a spot deliberately is a good shot, you know, just simply for the damage that little mistakes can do to you, particularly to your scorecard around there. So, you know, you get that feeling, and the atmosphere is just incredible. You know, and not to mention that it's a major championship. And I guess, you know, when you're someone like me who's, you know, not a Tiger Woods or a Phil Mickelson, you know, you don't get that chance, you know, very often. And it was incredible. But I mean, the practice rounds to me were just as amazing. I was fortunate enough to play with Adam Scott. Sort of, I saw him in the car park on the way through, and he said, "Oh, who are you playing with?" I said, "Oh, I'm just down on my own." And he goes, "Oh, you can't play." He goes, "Have you played here before?" I said, "Nah." And he goes, "Oh, you can't play around here on your own." He goes, "Go and see the locker room attendant, take your name out and tell him to put you in with me, Jeff and Aaron." And I'm thinking, Jeff and Aaron. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So out we went, you know, and they showed me around, which was great. And Steve Williams was, you know, had not long been on the bag for Adam then.
Scotty,
You know, so it was good to have a chat with him on the way around as well.
Yeah, entertaining.
Yeah, and then
he's got a few stories, I'm sure. Probably ones you can't say.
That's right. And then I think on the Monday I played with Stuart Sink, Davis Love the third, and David Duval, I think it was.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then another day I played with Kuchar and Anthony Kim and someone else. I can't think who it was now. But yeah, just amazing to be able to play with those guys as well. You know, and around a course like that, in an event like that. So, you know, come the first tee on the Thursday, you're a bit nervy, but at least by that stage I'd played with a number of really good players that week, which sort of, you know, probably took a bit of the edge off, but you know, you still feel that you want to get off to a good start if you can.
How'd you go on that first hole? Did you drive it over that bunker down the middle?
Yeah, I whipped it down the fairway and made an easy bogey, whipped it through the green for two and chipped it back up and missed it. Easy five.
There you go. Oh,
just to set little nerves. Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
You probably take five on your first hole of a major. I know I would. So
So,
well, moving ahead then, and want to talk about your first win, your 2015 NZ PGA Championship. You win by 3 strokes. I tried to do a bit of digging on the internet to have a look at footage of this tournament. I couldn't find any. I came up empty-handed. I wanted to understand.
It's probably a good thing.
Matt's bought all the rights for it, and he owns all the footage.
But yeah, we'd love to unpack your first win. I suppose, yeah, tell us how did it feel that week, and how did the tournament unfold for you, being your first win?
Yeah, it was great. It really was a monkey off the back. That year in 15, I'd played really well at the beginning of that year, and I'd gone close, I guess, a couple of times at not so much the Vic Open. I think I finished about 6th there, but that was the first tournament. I think the next week at Huntingdale, I might have, in the Vic PGA, I was in the top handful, top three, top something like that. And then, you know, I think we had another tournament, and then we had Queensland PGA, and that was the one I had a great week there, and I was three up with 3 to go from Ryan Fox and Cameron Smith, that's right, at Toowoomba. And I looked across as I was waiting on the 16th tee, I hadn't looked at the scoreboard all day, and I was going really well, and I saw this scoreboard go up the inside of 17. I'm looking at it, I'm going, oh, great. I'm 3 up, 3 to go. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Just keep going. Just keep going. Keep going. Yep. Anyway, so next minute I'm on 18, and people are saying to me that, you need a birdie here. I'm thinking, for what? And Ryan Fox had driven it on 16, the dogleg par 4. It's about a kilometre. it's not that far, but he hit an amazing shot over these trees and managed to run it on, to only like a few feet away, hold it, and then on the par 5 going up the hill, so that's one eagle, and then he hits it on the par 5 going up the hill just off the green and holds it from miles away from downtown. So he'd gone eagle, par, and I've gone par, and narrowly missed the birdie at 18.
Pars will get you home.
And all of a sudden, I've run second, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, and I've been knocking on the door, you know, for weeks on end, and I think I must have had a couple of seconds by then, and I'm thinking, you know, wow, what, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. I just, you know, I was unfortunate not to make birdie at 17, and, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, I left there just thinking, wow, maybe you won't ever win on this tour, you know. and look, Brian Fox, you know, called me and said, look, oh, you know, I feel really bad. And I said, you shouldn't feel bad. I said, mate, well done. I said, the aim of the game is to get it in the clubhouse at the lowest number. You got it there. I said, I don't like the way you did it, by the way, but well done. So, you know, so he was quite complimentary at the time. And then to go to have a week off the next week and then go to New Zealand and play at Remuera. And he lives just around the corner from there. And I remember after winning, and he came up to me and said, I won't say exactly what he said, because you don't need that sort of language here. But he said,
he's a guy in the bed now.
He just said,
all right, I'm getting the beer, mate. Goes, go for it.
He goes, right now, he goes, I couldn't care less. I couldn't give a shit. Well done. See ya. Way he went. So, but for me, it was a big week. You know, I'd played well once again, you know, all week. And the last day, it was a tough, tough day. It was a bit cool. It was, once again, it was blowing 50 plus. You know, I played with Jeff Drakeford that day. I remember him hitting some, like, he's long anyway, but I remember him hitting some amazing drives in that wind, whether it was into or down or across. You know, and the guys sort of threw a bit at me, but yeah, look, I played really well. I think I might have shot one under or even in those really strong winds, and the scores were very high. So I just remember being so thrilled and relieved to get that win.
Yeah, to have the monkey off your back would have been feeling quite nice lifting the trophy up and holding it up there. That definitely is a monkey off the back. Yeah. So you then, a few years later, you're back, back it up in 2018 with the Rebel Sports Masters, again by 4 strokes. it was only run once.
You're the only winner of that
In New Zealand, so no one's going to take that off you, mate. So
that's right.
You end up beating David Smale and Peter Fowler. You were coming second after round three, and came home with the win during the final day. That win again. How did that go down on the Sunday there?
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, it was a the course was a good golf course actually, but it dried out quite a lot. And you know, precision was really what was required around there. It wasn't length. There was a couple of holes where there might have been sort of considered on. I know a number of guys considered them doozies, you know, and you had to be very accurate in order to get your ball to stay on the fairway or stay out of the hazard, or you know, like it was quite dry. It was really hard to navigate your ball around and position it. So it sort of suited me pretty well. You know, and I played well. Played with Daniel Pierce in that final round. You know, and we'd had a bit of a battle, I think, in 17 at Toowoomba at the Queensland PGA again. Or unless it was 16, I can't remember. One of the two. And you know, so he ended up beating me in the playoff there. He did start, I think, that day with about 9-shot lead or 8 or 9-shot lead and extended it at the first, but so you know, we'd had a good battle at that event, and you know, I think we sort of, you know, we had that again at this event, but he sort of didn't get off to the greatest of starts on this last day. But I sort of just played solid golf and chipped away, and you know, it got a bit breezy, it dried out even more. But I just remember my ball control was really good. I'm not even sure if I made a bogey on that day. Or on that weekend, actually, there's a whole weekend, I think.
Yeah, right.
I don't think I made a bogey in that 36. So that was probably the thing that that really sort of stood out. You know, I made a number of birdies, but I just didn't make the errors. So once again, great to win an event. It's always great when you win. It doesn't matter the size of the event. It's always great. Right. It's a great feeling. So
exactly.
Yeah. It's what you play for.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And moving forward, I suppose, to sort of late last year, I read an article in the Canberra Times where it talked about a bit of a back problem you had. So a degenerative back problem. You had bone scans, soft tissue assessments, and an MRI. You had some injections in an attempt to get back on the course and get over to China for the World Championships. Give us a bit of insight into the injury and what that meant for you and your golf last year, and I suppose looking more now at COVID impacts, how is that traveling now for you?
Yeah, it was pretty awful. I've had a couple of injuries in the right side of the back, middle and lower. So, but it's all wear and tear, really. You know, I've been in and had all the scans, MRIs. I've had two lots of injections in there now, or three actually at a time. It's one of those wear and tear things, and you know, no one even suggests operating or anything like that. So that's a good thing. Because they say you don't come back too well from it when you operate. But that was a tough thing last year. I had a bad run with it, and then I went and got the work done, got the injections in time to be able to try and get over to play in China, and I did that. The injections lasted 8 weeks day to day, basically, before they wore off. And that happened to be the Tuesday of the Australian PGA. And I remember going into the physio, into Matt Green, and saying, mate, it's back. I can't do anything here. And and their advice was, look, you know, I don't think you should play. But I went out, tried, but I got about 25 holes in, and I just couldn't hit another ball. So I came back and sought further advice on it, and they were confident that it was okay, but it's just a matter of how we manage it and that. So I had some more injections a couple of weeks into the year to try and get me through that first 8 weeks into March, and that got me through, no worries. And touch wood, it's been good since. But probably that's probably one good thing about COVID. I haven't really played, you know, enough you know, with, you know, having to do things with kids and whatever, and a few other things going on in life. And, you know, so it's probably given my back a bit of a rest, in a sense, but now I'll be, you know, sort of ramping it up now with some things coming up and trying to get back into the practice and a bit more load there for it. So, yeah, it'll be a case of seeing how, you know, how we manage it through here and just trying to keep up the mobility and strength to it.
Yeah, all good.
Sorry, boys, I am still here. My camera's just gone dead. So I'm here. I'm a black screen at the moment, but I'll keep going. I'll see if we can fix this up. I had a question, Matt. Do you keep in contact with Chalmers? You've got a few things in common there.
Greg Chalmers?
Yeah, he's got some back issues as well.
And
he does, yeah. Yeah,
we spoke to him not long about it.
Don't talk to him a lot through the year, but you know, I'll message here and there about different things, and then I catch up with him at the end of year when he comes back and plays. He's a great fella, Greg.
I thought you might have had a WhatsApp group with maybe him and Tiger, and just your talk about your back issues together, or
throw Jay Day in there as well. And the common thing, though, you better not.
I think he's worse than us, Jason Day.
he definitely looks it at the moment. He had a problem last year picking up his kid on course,
and
that put it into spasm. So, I suppose having some rest this year through COVID. Hopefully has allowed that to rest up a bit and letting you ease back into the things as it looks to start ramping back up again soon. So, hopefully that goes well for you, mate.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, sorry about this. I'll try and fix it up as we go. But I just wanted to quickly touch base on your WGC events. You've been pretty lucky to go over there and play, you know, three big tournaments with the best in the world. And you know, Mexico and Shanghai, must have been a bit of a thrill to qualify and play for those tournaments. How did you qualify? You played in 2016, then you played two last year.
Yeah. So 2016 was a result. That was the HSBC. That was the result of finishing third on the PGA Tour Australasia money list. One and two on that list will get both Mexico and, HSBC. I think, and the winner also gets the British Open. But if you run third, you often get into the HSBC. There's no guarantee, but you usually get in. So, so I got in that year in 16 from a result of the third on the order of merit in 15. And then last year I got the two of them by running second on the order of merit in the end of 18. So, that was a pretty big one. I played really well most of that year, but particularly 18 at the back. Yeah, I think I finished fifth at the Aussie Open and third at the PGA at Royal Pines, so which was our last event. So that's got me over the line to finish second and get those events.
Yeah, nice. And a winner at Blitz Golf. At Kerr Lewis, tell those that don't really know about.
Yeah, what do you think about it? Yeah,
how it works and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a great format. When golf's looking for something different, we're trying to throw different things at it, and I think Simon Zybeck there's got a really good concept of Blitz Golf, and something that you can play as a professional or an amateur, and a lot of clubs have held those events and.
Yeah,
I think it's really good. You know, I think Simon sort of worked out in his team that they've worked out that, you know, there's a couple of things they need to change up, and they're making those adjustments as they go, and it seems to get better and better each year. But I think it's a great format, really, really good. Oh, you're back, mate. There you go.
I'm back. I've got it covered. I've changed up a few things here at the moment, and I've actually got a phone that's running as a webcam, and the other phone died, so I've just switched over new phones, and we're back and running. I think Blitz Golf is it's definitely an interesting concept and something I think anything that can get a few people that maybe find golf a little bit boring to watch or to participate in. I think it's a great innovation, and I think a lot of people are open to it, and I know you guys had a bit of fun with it down there, and it seems like a fun event and one that could hopefully take off. I'm sure people will support it and going forward.
I think the fact that you don't have to win each round to continue going through either. You know, you can play solid golf and away you go. And just keep advancing and keep advancing. And then, you know, you can really sort of see it amongst the players once it gets down to the business end. You know, there's a bit of tension there. Or in a wedge off, you know, you can sort of see that, you can see the mood. Yeah. It's a bit more, you know, there's not much banter happening. It's people are sort of starting to switch on. So, yeah, I think it's a good concept though. I think, you know, anything that sort of gives us more options and rather than just your stroke play or your Stableford or par or whatever, you know, anything that does that, you know, across the board for club golfers and even us professionals, you know, because people need to watch us do something different as well.
So, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at other sports and what they've done, and it's the way it is at the moment with the Big Bash and everything else. They're looking for new things to grab people's attention and to get people excited about it. So you can't hurt to try.
Shorter form of golf, but still competitive. It looks as though that's still a very big part of it. And it's not a case of people thinking that you've got to spend half your day or your day out playing. And to see this form come in where it's a shorter form, but you remain competitive throughout it. It's really cool to watch.
Yeah, it's great.
I guess wrapping up the career, finishing with that, we talk about where we are at the moment. Obviously, current status, you were in some really good form the past couple of years. I mean, you were the Tour of Australasia Player of the Year 2018. Had some really good results. Yep. 2018 had some good results. Even, you know, he took out the Murrumbidgee Pro-Am early this year, getting ready to you know, find that form. And then COVID hits and you're not going to Japan. Tell us about that, like, you know, that experience, I guess, for you and what the plan is going forward. If there is a plan, that's the other thing.
I think it's full of quarantine at the moment. A lot of people have been affected by it, obviously. You know, so I won't be going on with any sop stories or anything. But you know, I think it's something that obviously wasn't expected. You know, and you had plans to be playing in Japan or you know, and throughout Australia as well this year, but it's been hit on the head. But yeah, I think. We look like getting started here in some pro-am events in a couple of weeks' time up in the north coast of New South Wales.
Yeah.
I think Grafton, Yamba, Ocean Shores, Willumbar. So I'm going to go up and play up there just to try and get back into it. And then from the back of August starts the new spread of events, new series of events from Golf New South Wales and New South Wales PGA in conjunction with the New South Wales government, where they've put together six events for $50,000 in a pro-am style format, incorporating, you know, the elite amateurs that Golf New South Wales have and the professionals. So there's a lot of travel through there all around New South Wales. And then the tour events are scheduled to start in October. So I think two in WA and one in Northern Territory. And then, of course, you know, some events, some more tour events in November, but obviously the Victorian ones are probably in question at the moment. But who knows? I mean, if a decision doesn't need to be made yet, then maybe we might see it all under control and they still go ahead with no problems. But Japan this year looks like they're trying to get a start, but it just seems that every time they put out an email about something, within 2 or 3 days that tournament disappears. Yeah. So I think personally the best thing to do is say, listen, guys, let's put a line through it. See you next year in April and see if we can get things under control by then.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter the other day. They were talking about the Aussie Open. I saw a couple of pros were saying there's no chance that'll go ahead. What are your take on it? Do you think there's probably right that it won't go ahead?
Yeah, I don't. Well,
especially because it was meant to be down in Victoria this year.
Yeah. The whispers and rumours were, you know, a couple of months back, even, you know, in the middle of the hype of the COVID, I guess whispers were that, you know, at best it was 50%, you know, 50-50.
And now with this?
I think now with this, you'd probably say they'd be leaning towards, I mean, they've got to make a decision. What is it now? It's the end of July. So they've got to start making decisions in this next couple of weeks as to whether or not they hold a tournament in November. There's so much to, you know, put together and contracts, agreements, you know, different things that got to go in place. So you'd think they'd be making a decision in these next couple of weeks, and based on the way it looks down there, you'd probably say no. So, and if that's the case, it may move to the beginning of next year. That's an option that has been, you know, sort of whispered about as well. So, and look, that wouldn't be a bad option if it goes ahead then. But I mean, I hope the other, you know, events that are scheduled down there, I think the Vic PGA and the Gippsland Super 6, hopefully, you know, those events can go ahead in November if the Aussie Open can't. So, yeah.
Yeah, do you think this could have a really tough impact on golf, Australian golf? I mean, we've already lost the Masters. Like, you know, tournaments are kind of struggling. Do you think this could have a bad effect going forward, or do you think that it's something that gives us a bit of time to work out what we need to do with Australian golf?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think there's probably a number of ways to think about it. You know, it could go south, but you know, like you say, I mean, if we get our ideas and our ducks in a row and really work at something and maybe put something a little different together, maybe you might come out the other side of it better off. But I think being such a small country in a sense, you know, in terms of, you know, economically, we already struggle. We're not in a position where, you know, the PGA Tour or the European Tour are, you know, in terms of TV deals and having events and so on, you know, so we don't draw that revenue and that money that they draw. I think it's going to be difficult, but you know,
and you're not going to get any internationals coming down at the moment to play the Aussie Open anyways. So, and if you don't have a crowd there, you know, it's a tough one to run. I'm not sure if you've come across, did you come across Digger Lawson's story at the moment about how he's been stuck over in Austria?
Yeah, it's a bit of a rough one, isn't it?
I saw that
yesterday.
Quarantine and trying to work out to travel, and you know, he's had to fork out 9K to kind of come back on business because they're only letting business class or first class come back. So it's I guess it's tough to plan anything at the moment when there's just so many unknowns.
I guess it's difficult when they shift the rules. Being in that situation, you feel sorry for him.
Poor Digger. I think we're going to try and get him on in the next couple of weeks. He said he's going to have a bit of time in quarantine. So we're going to try and get him on and have a chat to him about it so he can unpack it. But, I couldn't think of anything worse. And you know, he had a couple of decent results over there as well. And then he's got to, you know, do that.
Yeah. Don't worry, mate. I think he won a BMW there for a hole-in-one, didn't he, not so long back? Did he?
I'll say that to him and say, look, Matt said you were fine, bring mate. That up. You know, just sell the Beamer and you're all good. You can buy a couple of tickets back.
Steve, it's not a good situation for him. It's a funny one. You know, you traveling a lot throws up a lot of different situations. Throws a lot of things at you, I guess. And
just in general, let alone throwing this into it. Exactly.
But just in these times, it's more uncertain, and you know, you already would have known that he would have been coming home to a quarantine stint, and you know, to then have to wait another 3 weeks over there just because, you know, the rules have changed. I can certainly feel where he'd be at, you know, and it's not a good place to be when you're away from friends and family and you're on your own. We've, you know, a lot of people have been through similar, not quite, but I can certainly. Certainly, sort of,
and people have been through worse as well. So you know, when you line it all up, there's people in worse situations as well. But obviously, not an ideal one for him. So hopefully, we'll get him on and have a chat to him.
Get sorted out quickly.
Because he's a good kid.
Entertaining. That'll be entertaining.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. Yeah. Especially if he's got a bit of cabin fever. It depends how long we leave him in his hotel. Maybe we'll get him at the back end of the quarantine, or we'll get him in the first few days.
Oh, good, good. Now, mate, before we let you go, we had a bloke that jumped on before we started the live chat and posted a comment here, and it's from Ian Jordan. It says, mate, what a great bloke and golfer. He won the Gunnedah Pro-Am and was looking to go to Europe after that long while ago, but still follow his scores. So that was from Ian Jordan in our group, mate. So yeah, you got some fans some fans in here, which is awesome, and we've had a few watching tonight, which is really cool. So appreciate that, and just wanted to make sure that you got Ian's comment as well.
Yeah,
coming
thanks
on
for that. Yeah, I'm going to head back to Gunnedah actually early September.
What a great place, Gunnedah.
I like Gunnedah. Good golf course there too. Geez, they turned out well. So I look forward to going back there this year. It's been a while. And Leeton, welcome to Leeton.
Yeah.
Is it better than Leeton? Mate, I don't think there's many better than Leeton. Probably only Kingston Heath.
Mate, we've got the auto irrigation in. We've got the clubhouses coming soon, mate. Right. By the time you get back, it'll be cracking and ready to go.
Might have some bunkers out there
soon
too.
You've wrapped it up, mate. And so I'm looking forward to getting
new greenkeeper, from Tumut out as well. So it's all happening. So exciting times. Thanks so much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it. And obviously, wish you all the best of luck returning to professional golf. Hopefully soon, and racking up some of those, many many top tens that you've got in your resume, Mr. Consistent. Hopefully, you're still back at it. And good luck with the back.
Yep.
Thanks, guys. Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks.
No dramas. No, thanks, Matt.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Well. All right, cool.
Mate, another awesome one. Told you he's a legend.
Yeah, that was really cool to speak to Matt. I suppose it's a really common theme across all of the chats we've had with all the Aussies. It's just everyone's so laid back and down to earth, but they've got that competitive and fighting spirit in them, which is really cool. And Matt's no exception to that. And bagging a couple of wins there and getting that monkey off his back, you can sort of tell that there was a good sense of relief there, but it also a good sense of confidence that it could actually happen. So another great Aussie to speak to, and thanks again for coming on, Matt. I can see you in the green room there. We'll have a bit of a chin wag just after we wrap it up.
Yeah, and to all the viewers, everyone that's still out there as well, or those listening, obviously you can listen to this via the podcast, and you might be doing so now. So thank you either way, the tuning in or listening to the podcast. And talking about the podcast, we got to record last night this week's episode. So we're releasing them differently over the last couple of weeks. So we're doing an episode first thing on Monday night to come out on Tuesday for you guys. So that you can listen to the wrap-up of the PGA, what's been going on, looking forward to next weekend's event, the rest of it. And then we're breaking up the interview that we're having on the Tuesday night and putting that in another episode that should be released on the Thursday. So make sure you get across those, subscribe so you don't miss out. Go back and listen to a few of the others. They've been great, and I think they're getting better and better, and I'm really enjoying them the more that we're doing them. So obviously,
this week's one is fantastic. Double par.
This week's double par. Got a good rant. It. Obviously, we're talking about Bryson's 10, and counting on his fingers and his toes. So
takes his glove off to count his fingers.
That'll drop tonight. So make sure you get around it. A big thank you again to Dint Putters and to Cobra Puma for supporting us and supporting Golf Days Australia. A reminder about the Dint Putters comp, guys. Get in there. Go and tag your mates that can't putt and share it. And then you're in the running for a $350 brand new handcrafted Australian made putter. It's pretty damn easy. There's been a heap of people on there and commenting. We've had, hundreds of comments, but the people are forgetting to share it. So there's been over 100 shares, but you've got a 1 in 100 share at the moment if you're in that for a $350 putter. And Steve's been using it, and even Steve's rolled some in. So it must be a decent putter. So get out there, enjoy it, enjoy the rest of your week, get out there and play some golf if you can. Other than that, we'll see you guys next Tuesday.
Take it easy.
We're three golf tragics, we're weekend hackers, and we love to go for golf, and I think that's
showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, 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 you did. We'll get to that.